Hey everyone, this is Joel and Lana, and this is the End of the Day show. Today we talked a lot about parent guilt and the struggles that new and more seasoned parents can go through, and just shared some tools and techniques that we've learned along the way, but also talked about a lot of our struggles and the different things that have weighed heavy on us and how we've been dealing with those and have dealt with them in the past. And yeah,
and we talk a lot about the heart and root issues behind parent guilt and the expectations and hopes that we have for our own kids. So if you like the episode, ask that you engage with us through commenting or following us, but otherwise have a great day. Let's talk about parent guilt. Boy, this is a fun topic.
A heavy one, kind of.
Yeah, it's a heavy one. Yeah, I think along with guilt comes expectations and unmet expectations and hopes lost and
desires.
And I think we can just have a conversation around those and just include people into the understandings that we've come to.
Are coming to.
This is not a finished product show. This is where we're currently at.
A day in the life.
A day in the life. The end of the day of parenting. And at the end of the day of being married to each other, this is where we're at.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think every day starts, or every day ends, with a little bit of parent guilt.
Right.
Because just even right now, putting the kids to bed, you know, there's frustration. It's like, oh, okay, day's over. I could handle that better.
I don't have those thoughts.
Oh, really? I have them all the time.
I have, and maybe I should have those thoughts, but I don't. I have major crisis moments where, like, I don't think I'm a good dad for a week straight. And then I sort of, I get over it.
It's like parenthood burnout.
Yeah, I don't know. It's definitely moments where I'm like talking to people, being like, hey, like, how's your being a dad? Because mine's sucking right now. But I don't have the recurring thoughts of I'm messing this kid's life up. I have, it's very like chill and sort of in my brain, it's all their kid's fault for a long time. And then I have like this self-reckoning, like, oh my gosh, I'm a terrible dad. Okay, it's better. And then it just sort of levels out again. But it's never, it's not the constant.
I feel mine's like social media with a broken reel that just keeps playing over and over and over again. You know, you get to the end of the day and you're just like, oh, I could have done that better. Oh, I could have done that better. Oh, that sucked. I wasn't my greatest then.
You like replay the whole day?
Yeah. Like some people get songs stuck in their head. I'll have a little bit of that, but it's like the guilt is like the song stuck in my head. Not necessarily as guilt, but it's just like, okay, it's finally quiet. There's not a lot going on. And then I start kind of replaying the day. And like, I think about the good moments and the funny moments and then the bad moments.
You do that every day?
Almost every day.
No, maybe that's why you can't go to sleep.
That's exactly why I can't go to sleep.
I can't go to sleep when I'm dealing with a lot of work stress. And then I have a lot of like what ifs. Well, what if that just got solved this way? Or what if, you know, this had conversation.
So I wonder if that's because obviously this is not my work, but it's also my only main focus.
Right.
And so it's almost like it is work stress where that's where all my time and energy goes into. How can I do this better? How can I do that? How do we manage that better? Whereas your work is what your main focus. I mean, obviously family's your focus, but it's the focus that takes up your whole day outside of the home. Right. Mm. Whereas I'm in the home. I wake up, you eat breakfast, you go to work.
When work is not in stressful mode or event planning mode or crisis mode, I'm not there every day.
Yeah.
Like I'm not replaying it in my brain.
Yeah.
Right? Like we have a big
fun. But you're also not micromanaging immature like a little tribe of immature people all the time. Like, yeah, you have students and stuff and you have employees that you are over, that you are helping guide, but they're not like pulling at you all day constantly, being like, at the end of the day, you're not shipping me off to someone else to deal with me. It's like, I'm it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I certainly don't deal with it every day. And I think, like, I listen to audiobooks to go to sleep right now because there's just a lot of work stress. But there's not a lot of parent stress. And I don't think that makes me a bad parent.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think it's just how two different brains work.
Right.
Right? Like, because we're different people with different functions. Just how we function differently.
Yeah, I certainly do function differently than you in a lot of ways. Really? I think I'm more free in the moment with the kids too.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where I'm also free to like go to sleep at night. But I'm not the save the day kind of dad. Honestly, like one of our kids fighting us with bedtime tonight. And she was frustrated with your rule. And so appealed to me to be like, well, dad, can you like talk her down?
Dad, can you deal with this? Get and on my side.
That is just a new thing for me.
Yeah.
Because normally I am either very fond or sort of really bit of a hard ass. I'm never, you're the more calm, consistent one. Like,
am I though?
Well, you don't
like calm to like,
well, I have, because my time is shorter with them.
That's true.
You know, I'm not the best dad in the world, but my time is shorter with them. So I
sort when of, you're with them, you're very intentional.
Right. But I have to come in heavy handed.
Yeah.
To like, save the day sort of for you and for them, but then things sort of calm down and that's when they don't need me so much, and then when they need to get their wriggles out they come to me. But normally if they're frustrated with me or we play too hard, they run to you.
Yeah,
which I think is a really common dynamic in marriage.
Oh yeah,
right, the whole bluey dad syndrome thing or whatever. But I think it is just sort of maybe the privilege of a father is I'm not replaying the day every day. But there is sometimes many days in a row where I just cannot shake the feeling of failure. And maybe it's like I'm more heavy-handed and a lot more fun with the kids. You know, sort of the same dynamic happens in thought life where you're more consistent. And if we're going through a tough season, it's consistently tough for you in your brain. Whereas if I'm more up and down.
Yeah.
So if things aren't catastrophic, I'm not really thinking about it too much.
Yeah.
But if things are bad, it is all I can think about.
Yeah. I think, like, I tend to be more of an anxious person than you are. I think maybe that plays a big part in it, because someone who has anxiety, they're constantly thinking worst case scenario in things. Like something like walking down the sidewalk. You could look at a stone and be like, if I tripped over that stone, I could fall and hit my face. You know, like you'll have random worst case scenario thoughts. And so at the end of the day with parenting, I think instead of playing over worst case scenario, you play over the worst case that happened. You know, like not what could happen, but like this happened and that sucked. And I didn't handle that well. And so it's just like a continuation. I think, I don't know. I don't know the science behind it. But in my mind, it makes sense. Like, it's kind of a continuation of anxiety and the stresses that come along with that. And it's not always something that's, like, founded on something that makes sense. It's just your body's always kind of, like, in fight or flight. Right. Like, nighttime, you sleep really well compared to me because I hear little sounds that the kids make. You'll be sitting there in the same room as me, awake. And I'm like, did you hear that? And you're like, no. There's nothing happening. Like, a kid coughed. I think they puked. And you're like, sure. There's nothing. I'll go check. And you come back, you're like, they puked.
Or
Or it was nothing. No, sometimes it has happened. Sometimes it happens.
But sometimes can't be the...
No. It's not.
The story we tell about this.
No. No, but sometimes, you know, so it's like... But like, I'm just more fine-tuned to thinking that way. Of like, oh, something's happening.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense.
So I think that's just like the difference in how we function.
Yeah.
Because you're like, oh, everything's fine. We're good. It's good. No one's crying. We're fine.
So what do you do when you feel like you are not being a good enough mom?
That one's a day-by-day basis. Hmm. Honestly, sometimes I spiral because I feel like I've already done a really crappy job.
Yeah. What does the spiral look like?
That's a really good question. I feel like that feels like a therapy question. I haven't deep dived into that yet.
For sure.
No, I think sometimes it's simple, like, you know, not getting up before the kids and making a breakfast that I think would be good to start their day. And I'm like, oh, crap. They already did this. They got themselves cereal and I wanted to make them pancakes today. And I'm like, oh, that was crappy. I should have done that. And then something else happened. And then I feel like I'm running behind on everything. And I feel like I almost like I freeze. Kind of like I don't know how to get ahead until maybe if I just stop here, it'll all crash and then I can restart. You know,
where's my phone? I'm just going
to
sit.
Where's my phone? I need mindless scroll. I need to tune out for a couple of minutes.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's you sit down on the couch or on your bed and you feel like you just can't get up because you're like everything is spinning.
Right.
I'm losing control. And sometimes it looks like you know, zoning out for a couple minutes and just trying to breathe and like recalculate. And
the thing with phones though, and I am so guilty of this.
Yeah.
A couple minute scroll turns into a 2 hour.
It's horrible.
Zombie fest. So fast. Yeah.
Yeah. And then because you're in your mind, you're like, I'm resetting. I need to do this for me. Then a kid comes in. Ah! A snack, and then you're like, how dare you interrupt my mindless scroll?
Right.
I'm doing this for me.
Yeah.
You know, and that sounds horrible. But I think a lot of us are guilty of that. Like, it's you don't intend to do it, but then afterwards you look back and you're like, oh, that was stupid.
It's a bit of a comfort thing too, though.
Yeah.
Like, I can't deal with these emotions right now, so I'm just going to look at Instagram.
It's something that will make me giggle or laugh, mm-hmm. or you know. And so sometimes it looks like that. Sometimes that's the spiral. And other times it looks like me not controlling my emotions very well. Mm. And, you know, having to call in to you for help to be like, help, I can't regulate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is, for you, what does a healthy response to that feeling of not good enough look like?
Yeah. That's a good question.
For sure.
I feel like done.
Joel asks good questions. All right.
Moving on. I don't know. I don't think I have a good answer for that. I think it's really layered. Like, there's kind of the deep level of what would help with that and that kind of the shallow level. What was the question again?
What does a healthy response to that feeling of not being good enough look like for you?
One of the things that's been really helpful, especially because our kids are a little bit older now, so I don't have to be in the same room as the babies, kind of thing. Sometimes it does look like going into my room and closing the door and not going on the bed or scrolling, but just like breathing and just like taking a couple deep breaths and being like, okay, I've been panicking. Brain's not getting enough oxygen. I just need to breathe.
Yeah. Regulate yourself.
Just regulate yourself and just take a couple deep, calm breaths and then tell myself it's okay and then go back out there. Other times it looks like texting you and saying, hey, tag, I need some encouragement.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not doing very well at this. I need you to step in and just help bring some light.
Yeah, I'm not sure if we've talked about that before.
I don't know if we've talked about tag. I think tag is one of my favorite things that we do in our marriage.
Yeah, I think it's really unique to us too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we were at like a church thing,
mm-hmm.
and someone was trying to encourage young couples And this was when we just had the two girls.
I think so. I think you remember this part a lot better than I do.
Yeah. And somebody was just, you know, checking in on us as parents. And we were not doing very good.
We were struggling.
And then they talked about how, I don't know exactly the metaphor, but in my mind, it is like in pro wrestling, where you are doing like a tag team. And
I don't know anything about pro wrestling.
I don't know anything about pro wrestling. But like, you know, when I was a young boy wrestling with my brothers, we would tag each other in and out. Mm.
Oh, right? Okay.
And it's like, tag, you're in.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Tag, take over in the ring.
Need
like,
your help.
I need your help.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so we sort of took that time of, you know, how can I intentionally encourage you when I'm out of the house? Or how can you intentionally encourage me? And so we just text each other the word tag when we're having a moment with the kids.
Not even with the kids. Sometimes it's with work. Sometimes it's just...
But when we're
day.
Going through a tough moment,
yeah,
the unity of a marriage can sort of come through where it's like, actually, even though I feel alone, I'm not alone. Mm-hmm. And I can tag you in, at least emotionally, to encourage me or, you know, things like that. So,
and I think this is really big for people who, like, words of affirmation are a really big part of their love language.
Mm.
Because, especially with raising young kids, they're not always the most affirming people in the world.
Right.
Like, sometimes they're like, oh, you're beautiful, you're amazing, I love you. And then sometimes they're like, you're the worst person in the world.
Yes, kids are not very kind.
And, you know, they're just speaking from, you know, their little life experiences and what they're feeling, those big emotions. But it's hard to not take that personal sometimes.
Yeah.
And it's hard to remember that they're not, you know, they're not necessarily intending to hurt you. They're just reacting from their big emotions and what they're feeling.
Yeah.
And want to bring people into their bubble of like, I'm hurt, you will be hurt with me.
Yeah.
But so when you're constantly being bombarded with that on a hard day, not saying every day is like that, but on a hard day when things are spiraling or just not going your way and your love tank is feeling tapped out, it's hard to help.
Yeah.
Yourself. Sometimes you need help.
Yeah.
And so for me, I don't know that words of affirmation is necessarily one of my love languages. I mean, like it affects me, but it's not like way up there at the top. But when I'm really struggling, having someone say, hey, you're doing an amazing job, you're a great mom, or you're beautiful, or just those things that I would have a hard time saying to myself.
Yeah.
On that day, like if I'm sick and I'm feeling haggard, someone saying you're beautiful is like, really? Thank you.
Is there any one of those times where you tagged me in that you can remember that was like, this time was really helpful?
Yeah, I think there have been a couple for sure.
My favorite one is I just knew you needed a bit of a laugh.
Okay.
So I found like a meme or whatever of that.
I don't remember this.
From the movie The Help.
Oh my gosh.
And it was like, it was like one of the characters.
You is kind.
Yeah.
You is.
You is smart. You is God.
And I love that movie. So it totally worked.
Yeah.
Yup.
Yeah.
I think that was also on like a hard homeschooling day too, where like one of our kids really doesn't like to learn from me because they're like, you can't teach me anything. And so just even the whole, like, you was kind, you was smart. I was like, I am smart.
Yeah.
I can do this.
But it's really nice to know that, you know, actually, it's really good for me to know that Lana's in my corner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah, because I think at the end, like, during the day, sometimes you can feel alone. You know you're not alone. You know you're in a partnership.
Yeah.
But you're in the thick of whatever you're doing. Like, I'm not at work with you most of the time. Sometimes I am.
Yeah.
But I'm not at work with you dealing with the conversations you're dealing with or having the interactions you're having. And so it can feel lonely.
Yeah.
And isolating. And to know that you have someone in your corner who is just waiting to be tagged in to be like, yeah, I'm going to pump you up. I'm going to lift you up and encourage you. And sometimes we don't even say what's going on. Sometimes we just say tag.
Yeah.
And it's kind of one of
those. I think more often than not.
More often than not. Yeah. Like, there have been a few moments where I've been like, tag. and here's the paragraph of everything. This is why I need you to tag in. But I think it also causes the person who's been tagged in to be really intentional about what they say. Because, you know, you have to kind of go, okay, he's at work. I know he had meetings today, and I know it was about this or about that. He's probably feeling this or that. What can I say to speak into that or speak into what I think might be going on? There's bubbles in my throat.
I just think it takes sort of the guesswork of, do I need to encourage this person right now?
Yeah.
Out of it for me.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you know what? We've developed this skill together where if she needs me to do it, she'll tell me about it. Mm-hmm. Right. I think I'm also realizing a bit of gap here where if you're not telling me about it, I don't think you need it now, which I don't think is fair.
No. I'm so proud of you coming to that realization.
I mean, you're not really sending me encouraging texts unless I ask for tag either.
No, which is a gap that I'm realizing too.
Yeah. But this is about growth, right?
I think that also kind of shows that words of affirmation, like, it's essential, but maybe not the highest on our...
Yeah.
Because whatever your love language is, tends to be what you also kind of put out there, right?
Yeah, I'm not necessarily a love language expert.
Neither am I.
I just know, like, it's sort of a joke that almost every guy's love language is physical touch. And it's like, oh, okay.
Is it a love language or just like a need? I don't know.
That's funny. I think we need love expressed in different ways at different times to us, right?
I think we all kind of need the spectrum of it.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just one. It's
not necessarily like, oh man, I know Lana loves me now. I can face the day.
Yeah.
But it's like, no, I know she is with me, right, from my perspective. And I know that she has sort of bonded her life to mine. So I can have this crappy meeting at work.
Yeah.
Or on the times when I'm at home with, you know, most of or all of the kids, and I am having a hard time, and I have the wherewithal to be like, is Lana in my corner? I need to text tag to her and find out.
Yeah. I've always kind of thought of it, like, is it the story of Moses? Where he had to, like, hold up, was it his hands or his staff or something? He just had to have his arms up. Was that the river crossing?
No, there was some kind of battle.
I can't remember what this was.
There was some kind of battle.
Oh, was it the...
No, was Joshua.
That was Joshua. Yeah. I'm getting my... But no, I just remember a story of, like, his arms up.
Yeah.
And people had to come and support him, right? I need to go back and read that story. I'm almost there.
You're almost there in Genesis?
I'm almost there. Or wherever? I'm in Exodus.
Exodus?
Oh, maybe I'm past it.
Anyway.
We're going to cut all of that out.
There is this Bible story
There's a story. Go ahead.
Moses has to keep his hands in the air for the Israelites to keep winning the battle.
That's it.
Yeah. And... as when he gets tired and his hands drop, the momentum of the battle shifts or whatever. And it's this interesting story, sort of with a lot of questions in it for me.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting story about how your friends need to come alongside you and sort of help you lift your hands to God.
Yeah. Well, right. I've always loved that part of the story. Maybe that's why I haven't really remembered the rest of it. I just get this very vivid picture of him with his hands up, and it's his job.
Yeah.
That's his battle, is to fight against the discomfort, but he has people supporting him so that he can fight his battle kind of thing.
Yeah.
And to me, that's kind of like tag a little bit, where it's like, I still have to fight through the battles that I'm doing at home or whatever it is that I'm fighting through. But you tagging is kind of like, I'm going to support you in this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to support you as a person, and I'm going to help you slightly, like just with words.
Yeah.
That will.
Yeah. That's
you.
Been a really helpful strategy to us over the last.
Yeah.
I don't know. 6-7 years.
Yeah.
At least sort
of. Yeah. It's been 6 or 7 years that we started that.
Yeah.
And it's nice with, like, when you're out in public or something and you're, like, struggling.
Because
I think we've done this a couple times, too. Where even if it's just, like, an overwhelming event, I'm just kind of like, tag. Normally that's me.
Right.
Like, help. But no one really knows what you're doing. It's just that little code word of like, okay.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
I need you.
And normally it's me just like swooping in and picking up four kids in my arms and carrying them away from you or
something. Or just being like, okay, and redirecting. We're going to go and do this and talk in this conversation over here. Yeah. Or, you know, it's just that little marriage connect where we get a chance to just see where the other one's at without going into great detail.
That's the thing too, because sometimes being like, I'm having a hard time, oh, tell me all about it, it's like, no, I don't want to tell you about my hard time, I just want something different in this moment. Right?
Sometimes you don't want to verbally process, and sometimes verbally processing can really bring down another person.
Right?
Like where you're you would end up smack talking another person, and that's not supporting them. It's not helping them through the battle that they're going through.
Yeah.
It's just listening to the ramblings of another person.
But yeah. And texting three letters, T-A-G, is a lot easier than saying, boy, this meeting did not go well. I'm not sure about getting this job. You know, all those things. Or it's easier than texting, man, this one kid is really screaming at me about math today. It's just simple.
Yeah.
Tag. Means bring me some support. Bring me some support, one way or another.
And I think we've kind of used it as like a SOS thing. So it's not like, oh, I'm just having like kind of a crummy day. I need, or I want them to encourage me and support me. And what, like, it's not like this thing that we do all of the time.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, I'm unraveling.
Yeah.
I need you to help me stop unraveling, and hold me together a little bit, kind of thing. Yeah. It's definitely been beneficial for us.
Certainly has. Saved us from quite a few.
Big blow-ups and stuff. Yeah. I find it works quickly, too. Like,
honestly, sometimes you don't even see the text. But if I just write tag, I'm recognizing my own needs in that moment.
Yeah.
And sometimes when you're overwhelmed, you can't even recognize your own needs. Mm-hmm. Right? But you begin to sort of self-process what you're going through, and understanding that there is somebody out there that may or may not read this text, but that at the end of the day, you'll see each other again.
Yeah.
Or after this drive home, I'll see you. And it's like, if whether you saw my text or not, it's, you know what? I sent out a signal.
Yeah.
Which means I internally carry some hope.
Yeah.
Towards the future.
True.
Right.
Yeah, sometimes I don't even, like, I'll see that you send a text back, and I don't open it right away, because if I'm in a good, somewhat healthy mental space, I will realize after I've sent tag, like, okay, this means I'm, like, really not doing okay right now, and then I kind of do the whole thing, like, okay, slow down, take a couple deep breaths, and kind of, like, work on me while I wait for your response, like, you know.
Right.
I called in the troops. So I just need to need to take a minute and reposition and regroup, and you know, but just even seeing the notification pop up, it's like, oh, okay, backup is here.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. And I don't even need to see you or see it. I just know that you're there.
Yeah.
And it's helpful.
So what goes through your mind when you see that come through on your phone, that I've sent a tag message?
Honestly, I look forward to the encouragement.
No, like when I am asking for help.
When you send tag.
Yeah.
My unfiltered response
absolutely.
Is, oh, shit. Okay. Something's going down. Yeah. I don't know how to say that, but.
That's fair. Yeah.
That's fair. Yeah. Yeah. And just being a family of faith, I will usually just kind of stop whatever I'm doing. And pray and ask for wisdom on, because like I can have my ideas of what I think you're going through, or what I think based on just knowing your schedule or whatever. But at the end of the day, I don't know what exactly you're going through. And so just asking for that little bit of wisdom or clarity to encourage you in a way that will effectively encourage you. I don't know how effective it's been.
Yeah.
But just, you know, it's like calling in the backup or the troops and then the extra. wave of backup. And so that's usually my first thought is like, okay, I got to pray into this and ask God what will effectively encourage him.
You're a better person than me.
Okay, but some days we're both tagging.
Yeah.
And that doesn't happen when we are both tagging. And I will admit that. Kind of like, oh, shoot, okay, what can I say to encourage him? And then tag. Now I need it back.
Yeah, for sure.
It's just like passing the baton back and forth.
Yeah, there's a little bit. Sometimes there are days like that.
Yeah.
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 For me, it is not always an opportunity to encourage you. Sometimes it's like, oh, now I have to think of something.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I do love her. Okay, so she's loved. Okay. Yeah. she is a good mom because we have four kids that I come home to every day, right?
Yeah. Like, yeah.
They're not. Usually not scrounging on the floor looking for food, right? She's a good mom.
Usually. They're never. The only ones who have ever looked on the floor for food are the toddlers.
Yeah. And they do it to themselves.
And they do it to themselves.
They throw it from the table to the floor.
They throw it and find their lunch later. I try to get to it before, though.
Yeah. No, I was making a joke. But it's not always... You're not always hitting me at a creative moment, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes you are. But other times it's like, no, I just need to let her know that I'm in her corner.
Just need to respond.
Even if I'm a broken person myself, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
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 Well, that kind of speaks to our personality types because I am creative. Mm. And you are like more practical and more like structured type of person. So that makes sense. You should try the creative side sometime.
I sent you that funny joke that one time, remember?
That one time. He was kind.
Oh, boy.
I think that was kind of stuck around, too, because every once in a while, we'll just kind of, like,
spout
that one off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think for me, when I realize I'm not being a good dad, I seek isolation. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm just like, okay, this isn't working at home. I need to be at work more. Mm-hmm. Or this isn't working at home. What can I do outside? Or does the dog
take the dog for a walk?
Does the dog need to go for an extra long walk today?
We've done two walks. We're going to go for a bike ride too.
Yeah. Talk about today, man. Oh my goodness.
Keeping it real.
Yeah. But yeah, I do also reach for my phone, but not, I don't like go somewhere else to look for my phone. I just pull it out where it is. And I just like, instead of looking at this kid that's throwing their ninth fit of the day, I'm just going to look at this thing that I can sort of have some control over.
Yeah. Like,
And that is like an immediate help, but a long-term hurt.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Kind of sucks. But
yeah, it's really humbling when like your toddler comes up to you and they like grab your phone. They're like, no more.
Jeez, that sucks.
And you're just like, shoot.
Yeah.
It's been a long day. And I've just like intentionally zoned out a few times on my phone.
Yeah.
And the little one is coming, being like, please, no more. Mm-hmm. Like, look at me. Like, Jude used to say that every once in a while. He'd be like, look at my eyes. Look at me. Look at my eyes. I'm talking. And you're like, you're right. You are talking and you deserve my attention.
Yeah.
And my full, you know.
Yeah, I think we are looking for better strategies around our phones.
We've gotten better.
We've gotten better.
Even setting timers, like the daily time limit. Mm-hmm. Even if you go over it, it's like that intentional
asking for permission, like
and like making that.
Give me 15 more minutes.
Yeah.
Give me 15 more minutes. Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, do I need that? Not really. Am I going to do that today? Yeah, that's been helpful for me because I used to get my like weekly report of how much time, and it was so humbling.
Yeah, well, I was just about to say, like, our weekly report comes out on our Sunday morning drive to church.
Yeah.
And either you're driving or I'm driving.
And both of our phones are like, bing!
Yeah.
We're like, ugh. It's like,
how many hours a day?
Do we want to look at this? Like,
Yeah, and you're going to church, so you want to get reset for the next week. And
yeah, you're going to do better this week.
Yeah.
And then, I feel like I'm getting better with it now that I don't have, like, nursing babies. Mm. Because I would just sit there and be, trapped on the chair and just what else am I going to do? You know, and so I'd get caught in that trap of like, instead of talking with my other kids, I'm just going to sit here and scroll and scroll and scroll. Mm-hmm. And then I feel like once they stop nursing, it's like, this is what I do though. This is what I spend my time doing.
Yeah.
And so I think I've gotten a lot better since that season has ended. Our youngest is 3 now. So I'm not in that season anymore.
Right. Yeah.
But between a shift in lifestyle, which that is a shift in lifestyle for me, and intentional actions, like putting a limit on my phone of how much time I want to spend on it, it's really humbling to be like, oh,
yeah,
I spent a lot of time doing that. I need to not do that.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think, you know, I seek isolation or I seek immediate like sensory relief of like, this sucks so bad, I'm just going to look at my phone.
Right? Yeah.
And I think my spiral often looks like this multi-day like down in the dumps crisis thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which often seems to coincide really well with our sort of a down moment in our sex life. And so it's like, oh man, the whole world hates me right now.
Sorry, moms, for listening.
Yeah, no kidding. But it's just, and
that gap between kids that was really long. Joel is spiraling. No.
My goodness, you're never gonna let that part go away. We have a 4-year gap between our second and third child.
Yeah.
And
that was for no reason.
We had some questions asking about how it's all going as a married couple.
Yeah, we had some family members be like, so are you guys connecting okay? Are you guys? And we're like, we're fine. Yeah. We're happy. Yeah.
Generally.
Yeah. I mean, we were in the throes of toddlers and stuff. But it was, that was like shocking. I was like, I can't believe someone actually asked us that. Like,
yeah. No, like, it just, honestly, it's just how it goes. Like, when I'm feeling down in the dumps already, it seems like that's the extra thing that piles on.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, wow, being at home super duper sucks because, you know, marriage life isn't exactly where I want it to be. These kids suck all the time. I feel guilty every time I look at them because I realize that even if I'm a perfect dad from now on, I've sort of marked them for life with my crappy moments. Yeah. And that seems to all pile on for a good week. And then it's like, something, usually church or something, gives me like a breath of fresh air and I'm like, oh yeah, life is okay.
Like, I'll never forget the moment that I first realized this was happening, like one of your spiral weak moments. We'd only been married a year or so, and our first was really, really young. We were living in the house with the pool. And you were having a bit of a spiral week, and I had noticed that you'd been really, really down. And at that time, you would still kind of play video games a little bit. And so if you were playing more video games, that meant that things were going really crappy.
Mm-hmm.
And you come home and you kind of, you know, you would do your family life thing, but then you would go and play video games at nighttime. And I remember just sitting there being like, are you okay? Like, is everything fine? And then you just sat in the middle of the living room floor. And you, like, grabbed her Bumbo. Do you remember her little Bumbo seat? The, like, little toddler.
The green thing?
The green Bumbo.
I don't remember.
And you, like, put it on your head. And you're like, what am I doing with my life? I was like, I don't know what to do with this right now.
Who did I marry?
Yeah, no, it was just, it was funny. And I think it was very shortly after that that we made, like, a big life change.
Right.
Of
moving,
because I'd realized what an effect our life at that time was having on you and your, like, you know, just your state of being. I was like, oh, okay, so we need to make some life changes for our family to, like, kind of pull you out of this funk so that you're not stressing
right
to the big degree that you are. But there have been, like, funny little moments like that where, like, you are, like, absolutely spiraling, and
that sounds funny.
No, well, no, it's funny for me because it's, no, the whole, it's definitely not funny. It's really crappy for the most part. But then by the end of it, like right before you pull out of it, usually it's just like something, it's like this little thing goes on your head and you're just like,
it's my
it's your coping mechanism. You're like, I just need to like block out the world.
What do they call it? A dunce cap? Like when,
yeah,
back in schools when, I don't know, like the 30s or 40s.
Like a little tinfoil hat where you're like, reflect off the negative. You just do not penetrate my brain.
It's so funny that you think it would be like that.
Well, I mean, it's obviously more serious than that. But usually you get to a point where you just become kind of goofy.
But
like
not lighthearted goofy.
Not lighthearted goofy. Right. Like the, oh my goodness, I don't know what else to do.
Right.
Other than like cry, but I don't want to cry, so I'm going to laugh and do something stupid to make myself laugh. It's just like, oh, okay, we got to make a change.
Yeah.
But so you build up.
Yeah, I
build up over time to the point where you get to, like, okay, there's a big crisis.
Yeah.
Whereas I have little bursts of, like, crisis more consistently, I think. Mm-hmm. I'm like, today is getting bad.
Yeah.
And then,
Man, I would so appreciate that over what I go through.
Yeah.
Because I get, yeah, like, I can get dark.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're a big music guy, too. And so depending on, like, what music I hear in the background, it's like, oh, we're in that stage. Okay.
That is like, funny. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
So there's this one artist that I listened to when I was a heartbroken 17-year-old all the time. And
so those heartbroken 17-year-old songs get you every time.
Oh, man, they do. Yeah. But honestly, like, I was legit depressed, I think.
Okay, who was the artist?
He goes by a couple of different names.
Okay.
And, okay. Anyway, it's Bright Eyes is one of his names, or Connor Oberst is another. Yeah. Yeah. And it's just really angsty, sad music. Like, one song is about his gay cousin who killed himself, and, you know,
just like deep
plane dark crashes of emotion into the ocean. And like, just, you know, all of these kinds of things. And I was watching YouTube, as I do.
Yeah.
And there's this one channel that I watch, and it is this guy. He does guitar reaction videos,
mm-hmm.
but from the perspective of like a guitar teacher.
Okay.
So maybe this is a bit of a warning flag going up, but
the red flag guy.
Red flag. That's not a red flag. Like,
okay.
I think a red flag is like character flaw. This is like, hey, warning flag.
Warning.
Like, but he.
Amber lights flashing.
Yeah, like I was watching, and one of the guitar react guy videos was recommended to me, and it was him reacting to Connor Oberst.
Okay.
And it was like, I haven't seen this one channel for a long time, uh-huh. and I certainly have not thought of Connor Oberst for a long time, which means things are going well.
Fairly well, yeah.
But then I was like, oh yeah, I do like this song. I do like this music. Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah, life does suck sometimes.
Got in your feels.
Got in my feels, right? Anyway, but it's nice to have, like, those built-in sort of character flaws that I have. It's nice to have those because I know, like, when I want to watch, like, the 13th episode of Top Gear in a row, it's like, oh, hold on, Joel. Like,
yeah.
Are you losing your grip on reality a little bit here?
Yeah.
Or when I want to listen to a certain kind of music that's comforting in the wrong way, it's like, oh, actually, check yourself before you wreck yourself, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and especially music. Like, I feel like you have a deep appreciation for music.
Yeah. Honestly, like, it's like, what do they call it?
Okay, so when we first got married.
Yeah.
I remember, backtrack even further than that. I remember being in high school and like the big iPod things came out and it was like, you can put 100 songs or 1,000 songs or whatever the first one was. Do you remember those?
Yes.
Like the really big bulky ones?
Yeah.
And my cousin had one and I was like, I don't even think I know 100 songs. And it was just, it like blew my mind that someone could have a device with 100 songs on it. I feel like it makes me sound really old. And then I meet you. And your CD collection filled multiple massive Rubbermaid bins.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we hauled those things from house to house. And we moved a lot. But it was like, this is Joel's,
idol.
Like, prized possession music collection.
Yeah.
And, like, whenever we'd go to Walmart, you'd go, like, straight to the CDs and be like, oh, this one's good and this one's good. I'm like, I've never even heard of these artists before.
Right.
But we would, like, we loved going for drives. And that was kind of a majority of our dating life, was we'd go for a car ride mm-hmm. and listen to music. And that would kind of, like, set the scene for what was happening that day. You'd be like, oh, I have the perfect song for this. All right.
That was so lame.
It was cute. It was almost like make CDs, only you had all of the CDs and would, like, pull one out and be like, we're going to listen to this song. And then we're going to listen to this one. And I'm
so,
like,
corny.
What?
Oh, gosh.
It was great. You exposed me to a lot of music.
So cringy.
But... And, like, to this day, there are certain songs that will pop up and I'm like, oh, this reminds me of this memory from, like, when we went on this date. Mm-hmm. But you would obviously always sing along
right.
to the songs because you were just so excited about it. And, like, you'd always pick up on different musical riffs that I didn't even hear or, like, instrumental
yeah.
parts. And it was just like, oh, I've heard this song a million times, but I didn't even hear that in the background. And that's, like, the part you cling on to. You're like, oh. This part's the best. I'm like, what? I didn't even know.
Right.
Anyway, so music's always been, like, a massive thing for you.
Yeah. It's, like, outside of human relationships, mm-hmm. probably the biggest heartbreak of my life is that I'm not more musically talented.
Yeah.
Because I wish that I could get close yeah. to my love of music with the mm-hmm. talent that I have, right? But anyway.
Okay, but to be fair, I think a little bit of that is self-inflicted because...
Yeah, tell me. Go ahead.
No, because when you do, like, when you commit yourself to something, you do really well at it and you grow in it. And, like, just from what you told me about, like, when you were a bit younger, like, you loved playing guitar. And then people said negative things to you about, like, oh, you're not good enough or you're not, you know, and you take people's words to heart. And so... But, like, then, you know, after being married for a certain number of years and then you decided you wanted to try picking up guitar again, like, you picked it up really quickly. I cannot for the life of me figure out guitar. My brain just does not work that way.
Right.
And, like, I'm somewhat musical, but not overly. But, like, I just, like, my brain and guitars does not work.
Yeah.
But you picked it up fairly quickly. But I think you are your hardest critic because you have the voices of people from the past and their negative opinions speaking into that. And it's, I think it hurts the hardest because music is something that you love so much.
Right.
And it's a big part of you. And so for people to speak negatively into that, it's like,
yeah,
you know, like a dagger to the soul kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But when you apply yourself to it, you do really well. So I think you've kind of pigeonholed yourself into this corner of being like, oh, I'm not musically gifted.
Well, I don't think I say that anymore.
No, you've come out of it a lot.
But, like, I am
yeah.
like musically frustrated where I just, like, I wish I could get better faster.
Yeah.
At this point. And I'm not practicing. Like, you know, I got 4 kids, a full time plus job, and you know, like, there's not time in my life anymore. But I really talk about parent guilt, like, I'm sort of living in expected parent guilt or projected parent guilt,
mm-hmm.
where we all have, like, these issues in our lives growing up, these hurts in our hearts.
Oh, yeah.
And I get really sensitive around mm-hmm. someone, anybody, even me or my kids' siblings, telling them that they're not good at music or that they should stop singing or things like that. Because I live in the past on some of these hurts
mm-hmm.
where it's like, no, you won't talk to her like that, or you won't talk to him like
you
that.
Won't speak that over them. Yeah.
And meanwhile, it might not be anywhere close to a major thing for them.
Yeah.
But it's like,
you're so aware of it.
I'm so aware of
it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But. Yeah. Especially sibling dynamics. Like, that is such a powerful thing.
Yes.
Like, the things that siblings speak over siblings really has, it can have a lifelong impact.
Yeah.
Because those are the people that have grown up with you. They've seen you at your best and your worst. And the things that they choose to speak over you is like, oh, that's how they see me kind of thing. And they're with me all the time.
Yeah.
So I think that's another reason why you're kind of like, no, like that is your sibling. Like, love them. Yeah. Be kind. Encourage them. Don't speak that. And like, siblings will be siblings, and there's always going to be some kind of rivalry. But trying to instill in them to like speak life into that, not death.
I also just want our kids to be lighthearted with each other.
Yeah.
Just because someone says something stupid to you, even if they're your sibling, like, you don't have to let it sink to your heart. You know, but it's hard.
Yeah. So you started off by saying, I don't think I have a lot of parent guilt. And then you're just like, oh, yeah. And there's this and this.
Yeah.
Once you open the door, it's like, oh, shoot. That's like, there's a lot there to unpack.
Well, I went to a conference. Well, I don't know when. Like a work thing. And somebody I know from Ontario, I was going through one of these moments where it's like, oh my gosh, especially our oldest. Mm-hmm. Like, I was not a good parent when I was 20, 21, whenever she was born. And everyone's first is hard for them. Mm-hmm. But I feel like in a lot of ways, we disadvantaged ourselves by having our kids so young.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't change anything, right? But yeah. I am, now that I've been a parent for 11 years, congratulations today, 11 years today.
11 years. Hardest day of my life.
Like, sort of the first 5 years were such a gong show compared to the last 6 years.
Yeah.
And she bore the brunt of that, right? And so I think that's where most of my parent guilt lies, is just understanding that she's not going to have necessarily the same childhood as her younger siblings and stuff.
And I think that's normal.
Yeah.
Like, you'll often hear families of any size, if there's multiple kids, the older one's always like, oh, you had it so much easier than me, to the younger ones, right? And like, that's true in my family, and you're definitely in your family. Because there's so many of you. You had like three different family units just within the kids.
We'll call that a story for another time. For now.
Flag that one for later.
Yeah.
But part of that is just growing and maturing, like, on our part. Yeah.
So I went to this conference, and a new friend, we were just real with each other about, he's been a dad for less time, but we're about the same age. And he shared some wisdom with me. He's like, no matter how perfect of a dad you'll be, you'll always pale in comparison to God the Father.
That's good.
Yeah. And actually, the holes that you create in her life are areas where God wants to bring healing to her. I was like, good. It still sucks that I'm the one doing it, though.
Like, yeah.
And every person has good and bad things to say about their father, I think. That's just how it goes, right?
Yeah.
I think less so about their mom. I think moms just...
I think it depends. It depends on the person.
It certainly does depend on the person. But almost every single person is not...
Also from a male... Yeah. Like, not to do the whole male-female perspective thing.
Right.
But, like, generally... sons tend to be closer with their moms.
Okay.
Right? Yeah. And so it's harder to see, or it's maybe not as prominent.
Yeah, maybe that's fair.
And like, that's a big claim, so I'm not going to make that as a claim.
Yeah.
But girls will definitely...
I think you have a more complicated relationship with your mom than you do your dad, maybe. I mean, your parents are both really great, but generally I think women have more complicated relationships
with their mom. I feel like I kind of got it easy. Like, I get along with both my parents pretty great. But just watching a lot of my friends walk through what they walk through with their parents, like, generally dad is, you know, if dad's around and present, dad is like their comfort, and mom is like the mom and I got into it again,
right?
Whereas with the guy friends, it was always like, oh yeah, mom's always there, and dad and I are always like butting heads.
That's interesting. Yeah, I think I realize how much of my own bias I'm pushing on towards other people. Like, my parents are both really great, and I'm super proud to be their son. But I read this book where, sort of like a book for men or whatever, and it's a Christian book, but it talks about how in every man's journey, they have to heal something called like the father wound, right? Okay. And like at one point or another, either through absence or through presence, like your father hurt you, you know, and that is so fundamental to the identity of a man growing up, that hurt. And it was like, that book was very eye-opening and sort of set the stage for a lot of healing in my life after I became a dad. Yeah. But it also added a lot of responsibility, and rightly so, to my own parenthood journey.
Yeah.
But I think also it added some pressure when I wasn't totally equipped to handle it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't sort of naturally grow into fatherhood right away.
Yeah.
Because I was sort of sorting out my own issues at that moment in time. Right away, I was recognizing the heaviness of fatherhood and not always the joy of hanging out with a baby.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest detriments, maybe, to, like, our younger years as parents, for me, was people normalizing things that maybe shouldn't be normalized. So, like, I struggled with our first when she was born. I had all these really great high expectations that everyone talks about, like, oh, the baby's born, you take in that newborn baby smell, and you're just instantly bonded, and just the overwhelming sense of love and affection. And, like, I was smitten with her, absolutely loved and adored her, but I was in so much pain, and like, that's normal. But her delivery was so traumatic that it took me a long time to be like, okay, this was worth it. You know, like, I was so traumatized by it that I had a hard time connecting and a hard time with that, like, instant bond, you know, that's like the hallmark brand of motherhood.
Yeah.
And I felt guilty and I felt angry because I felt robbed of that. That moment. So I guess that's like a huge mom guilt thing for me too, is motherhood started out really rough, where I wasn't the mom I was expecting to be. And I had health issues, and that's a story for another time. But all of that contributed to it, but then it resulted in me being like an angry mom. Mm. And what I mean by like the detriment of people normalizing things is, instead of getting the encouragement of being like, you can get help for this, or, you know, let me step in and do laundry so you can go take a shower so you can, not you, but like, you know, people surrounding me, I got a lot of, oh, that's normal. Yeah, I was an angry mom. We all go through it.
Hmm.
It's okay to be an angry mom. You'll grow through it. And it just like, it gave me a pass. It gave me permission to be the angry mom.
Yeah. Instead of someone calling you to your best, someone was...
Instead of someone being like, hey, I've walked through this and these are the tools that I used to get through it, or this is what I've learned along the way.
Yeah.
To help me get through it. Instead of things like that, it was like, it's okay. You'll be fine. We all go through it. It's normal. And like, there is some camaraderie in that, to be like, okay, I'm not the only one. Someone else has gone through that. But then it was like, it's okay to be the angry mom.
Yeah.
I was the angry mom. And now look at me now. I'm not. But there was no, like, there was no bridge.
Yeah, there was no actual pulling you up. It was like, oh, I see you in your misery. It's okay. Yeah. It's okay to stay there.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's almost like when someone says, like, hey, I'm going through a tough time, and people are like, good vibes and prayers. It's like, okay, well, are you like, gonna, are you gonna go make them a meal? Are you gonna? Yeah.
Good vibes and prayers. How are you going to actually help them? I need to get my kid to the doctor.
Yeah. I need food tonight. Okay, praying that, or you know, like, and those are all good things, but the like physical, tangible help of like, this is something you can actually use, wasn't necessarily there. And being a new mom, I didn't know how to ask for that. I didn't know what to ask for. I didn't know who to ask. And I feel like that's a struggle that a lot of first-time moms go through, where there's so much information out there now that you don't know where to start, and it's easy to get overwhelmed. And it's easy to just fall into the comparison trap of, oh, everyone else has been through this, so it's okay if I go through it. Or, oh, this is normal. It's okay to have rage fits. Like, postpartum rage is a thing, and I had no idea. And I strongly believe that's something that I struggled with without knowing it.
Right.
It wasn't until our third, after our third was born, and I was with a midwife after being with an OB for two kids. And I said, oh, yeah, well, I'm kind of struggling with this a little bit. And she's like, did you struggle with these thoughts or these actions or these emotions after your other two? I was like, oh, yeah, totally. But it's okay. It's normal. She's like, no, that's postpartum, like, anxiety and depression. And I was like, oh, that explains so much. Like, you just laid out my life and was like, I've named it.
Like, yeah.
Now you can deal with it. And so it was just, it was eye-opening to me to realize I don't want to be that voice in other people's lives, to be like, it's okay, I give you permission. We all go through that. It's kind of like the, feels like it's the rage on social media to be like, you know, end of the day, it's been a hard day with kids, let's all like clink our cheers,
yeah,
or our glass of wine and just
validate the brokenness,
validate that we suck at this. And it's just like, no, we don't have to, though. We can encourage each other and say, hey, I'm there, or I've been there. What can we do to encourage each other to be better and to get better and to work through it?
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like a lot of my mom guilt from the first years was just first not realizing that I was struggling with postpartum depression and anxiety and rage, and not knowing how to ask for help for that or who to ask for help, and being so naive to just take any information that was given to me and being like, oh, I'm going to hold on to that. You said that you went through that and that's normal. I'm going to hold on to that. It's okay for me to be a ragey mom, or, yeah, and then have these sweet children be the receiving end of that. And it's not like anything bad ever happened. You know, nothing bad ever happened, but it was that struggle within myself of like, why am I exploding right now?
Yeah.
You know, she literally just tipped over a bowl of cereal. Instead, I could help her clean that up and be like, it's okay, let's learn through it. But it was like, what are you doing?
Yeah, that's
you tough. Know?
Because there's so much modeling with parenting, right? There's so much like, I have come to understand that being a parent who tries is like probably the hardest thing in the world.
Yeah.
Because you're constantly evaluating yourself in the most human of scenarios.
Yeah.
Like, where humanity and the ability to do wrong and the ability to set up future generations for success are all right in the palm of your hands.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't acknowledge it, and other times it's all you can think about, and you know, it is a heavy, hard thing, but
but at the same time it's beautiful, right? Like, you have those hard moments. Like, not too long ago, actually, a couple weeks ago, I think I had a really low moment where I was not my best, and it resulted in me kind of sitting in the middle of the floor just crying. I was just like, I can't do this anymore. What am I doing? And then the guilt laid on of like, oh, I yelled at the kids, and I shouldn't have yelled for that, and I should have actually just helped them with that, and the whole process of the spiral happening. And I just had to go into my room and just sit and cry, because I was like, I need to release this emotion. I need to stop holding it in. And I didn't notice that one of the kids had opened the door, and our youngest, who was two at the time, just came up and just like looked up at me and like put his little hand on me and just sat there, because he was like, oh, mommy's having a hard moment, I'm just gonna be here with her. And like, he was one of the reasons why I was losing it. Because he had emptied his clothes out of his dresser for the fourth time that day. And, you know,
so stop being compassionate with me, you two-year-old. I'm mad at you.
And he had, like, thrown his pull-up on the floor, and I stepped on it. And it was just like, this is not, you know, just little things that add up that make you go, oh, my goodness, I'm going to pull my hair out. And just like this sweet kid who was causing the epicenter of like my frustration at that time, just came up and totally diffused all of it just by being compassionate and patient with me and just putting his hand on me and looking up at me like, I love you.
Yeah.
And like, he didn't have to say anything, but he just kind of, oh, mommy, sad? I help. And I was just like, oh, man, like, what a beautiful moment to witness him not hold a grudge against me, being like, you just yelled at me and now you're crying, but I should be the one crying kind of thing, to just like put that aside and be selfless and be like, I see a need, I'm going to help you. And it's like, there's beautiful moments like that where you get to witness a little bit of who they're going to be when they grow up and to see like, oh, this is worth it. Like this is, that's a whole person right there with a whole life ahead of them. And I'm not completely ruining them. You know, they're so quick to forgive and forget.
Yeah.
And just move on and love you unconditionally.
And maybe so, that's the benefit of like that first, you know, 3 to 5 years of kids not remembering things.
Yeah.
It's just like give their parents a chance
to adjust, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if there is something that you could say around parent guilt, like what would be your, how would you sum it up for parents?
Okay. So I just heard a talk yesterday at a mom's group where someone actually touched on this topic. And I really liked what she had to say, where when you're in those moments of kind of the guilt is laying on, whether it's thick or light, sift through it and ask yourself, is this the type of guilt where it's highlighting something that maybe I can work at and it's actually something that would be beneficial to like actually pay attention to? Mm-hmm. Be like, I'm feeling guilty for this reason. Or is it false? Is it something that you've just made up a story in your head through your spiral of like, cause you know, when you get angry, you see everything through like red glasses. You're like, everything is awful. Everyone hates me. You know, like our other boy, when he gets really upset, he goes, why do you hate me? And we're like, we've never said that to you. We've never shown that to you. Like no one hates you. But because he's angry and he's in that rage, he's like, everyone hates me. Why does no one care? And it to him, that's like what he's feeling in that moment. But it's a lie. People don't hate him.
Yeah.
They haven't shown that to him. He just doesn't know how else to express what he's feeling. And it comes out in that way. It's like in those moments of like parent guilt, it's like, is this something that is highlighted for a reason? You know, if we feel guilty about our phones and scrolling, the mindless scroll, maybe that's being highlighted so we can be intentional. So like, yeah, sure. Do what you need to do to feel better about it. But then take a step. That's something you can take a step towards remedying, you know? Whereas the other ones, it's like, no, you're not a crappy mom. You know, you're doing your best. And, you know, look at where you started and look at where you're at now. That's a lie. Don't listen to it. Cancel it out. You know? Mm-hmm. So I think it would be to just filter through it. The ones that are garbage, just toss it. Don't linger on them. And the ones that actually have weight to them, the things that really make you feel heavy because you know in your heart that it's true, don't hold on to the guilt, but do something about it.
Yeah.
Try and walk forward and be like, how can I heal this in myself? And that's something I'm constantly, like just even bedtime, you know, I walked away and went, I could have handled that better. I feel guilty about it. Tomorrow I'm going to try and speak a little bit more calmly when they're asking for the same thing a millionth time in a row. Yeah. You know?
I think for me, it's a lot more spiritual.
Hmm.
Where it's...
Parenthood is a very spiritual journey.
Yeah. Like, it is very much, okay, obviously I'm looking at my phone too much, or obviously I'm raising my voice too much, or obviously I, you know, those kids learn door slamming from somebody, right?
Yeah.
I could do less of those things, right? Mm-hmm. But I will always be a broken dad. Like, I'm never mm-hmm. going to be the perfect father for them.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And nothing has taught me that more, my imperfect nature and my incomplete nature, than being a dad. Mm-hmm. Right? And so, as a Christian, it's like, man, in the weakness of my fatherhood, but also the weakness of my whole life, Jesus loves me. But I'm not complete without him. So mm-hmm. I need to lean into that relationship more.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And actually, through that, I become a better person. Mm-hmm. I become more intentional in those moments. I'm quicker to remember to be slow to anger. Yeah. Instead of after the fact, sometimes it's before the fact, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I would say there's a difference also between being convicted of wrong mm-hmm. and being condemned of wrong. Mm-hmm. And for a long time, sometimes even still,
yeah,
I let all of the little moments of guilt and shame build up into a condemnation of who I am. Mm. Right?
And it's easy to do.
And so then I easy. Just get down in the dumps for
you're a like, week. I'm just a horrible being.
Yeah. Like, you know, I can't even look my kids in the eye because I know that I've messed this up. Mm-hmm. Right? And it's like, that is not a healthy response. Right? Let conviction happen, which is like, here, something is wrong. Change it. Move on.
It's just like highlighting it.
Yeah. But once you, for me, once I start to dwell in condemnation, I actually become the worst parent I could be. Mm-hmm. Because I'm emotionally removing myself from their life. Mm-hmm. When actually what they need is, even in my brokenness, for me to be emotionally vulnerable.
Yeah.
And close to them. But
yeah, I can't even count how many times I've just had the thought, like, in my worst moments, just being like, I wish I could just restart.
Yeah.
I just wish there was like an easy button or a restart button, being like, okay, let's go back to level one and we're going to restart this all from the beginning and we're going to do better this time because I bombed this time.
Yeah.
Because it's easier to just stop than it is to go forward and work at something that's broken.
Yeah.
You know, it's easier to just kind of toss it to the side and not deal with it than to be like, okay, I did this damage. I'm going to try and repair that while I can, kind of thing. And so there have been so many moments where I've just been like, if only. If only there was a level one to go back to. But then I realize,
well, like, there's that saying, the best time to plant a tree is 10 years ago.
Yeah.
The next best time is right now.
Yeah.
Right.
But then I realize that there's also a beauty to the journey and the fact that you're doing it with your kids. Right? Like, we weren't horrible parents.
No.
We did the best we could with what we had, and we didn't have a lot. And we didn't, like, we were young. I know there's parents that are a lot younger than we were, but like, we were young and struggling, and, you know, we were still so new to just our relationship and working through that. And, you know, there were so many areas where we could have done better or been so much better or just been more skilled as parents. And our daughters did walk through all of that with us. And they probably don't remember a majority of it because they were so young.
Yeah.
But they've walked through the rest of the years with us, and, you know, having those moments of being like, oh, I wish I could just stop and go back, realizing that they're watching still and they're living through that moment with you as well. And it was really, really big for me when someone said, because I struggled with just regulating myself and not getting upset over little things, when someone told me, like, hey, the most impactful thing you'll be able to do, if that's your struggle, is in the moment, acknowledge it and apologize to your kid and talk them through how what you did was wrong. And, like, that's powerful. And I I knew it was right, but it's hard. Like, no one wants to admit that they're wrong. And especially to a little mini version of you who was fighting with you and he was so adamant that you're wrong. And you're like, I'm not wrong. I'm the adult. I can't be wrong. And then to be like, to go to them and humble yourself and be like, I was wrong in how I responded to that. I'm sorry. Can you forgive me? The first couple of times it caught them so off guard.
Yeah.
They were just like, well, what is happening right now? And it was really cool because I just witnessed it happen a couple of times just yesterday where our oldest, who has walked through every season of parenthood with us and is generally one of the main sources of me going, I wish I could just have a redo so that I could be better for them.
Yeah.
In how I interact and stuff. You know, she had a big blow up with the one sibling that she normally clashes with. And she was so quick to be like, you know what? That was wrong. I should not have reacted that way. Can you forgive me? And the other sibling was still reacting and still like, you know, blowing up a bit at her. But she was able to stop and be like, that was wrong of me. I'm so sorry. Here, I'll help you. And like, that was the last kid I expected that from. I did not expect that at all. And it was kind of like, hey, I thought I had totally like damaged this kid.
Yeah.
And she just did that so much better than I've ever done that. And she's starting to like implement that. And so I think that was like
a good moment.
That was a good moment.
But also a moment with a theme in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not just a good moment to be like,
but it was
everything
like,
sucked, but there was one good moment, so everything's okay.
But it was like reassuring to me to be like you said, like the next best time to plant a tree is right now.
Yeah.
And like, and so I think it's important to keep picking up tools, to keep talking to people that can mentor you, that where you respect their parenting style and their relationship that they have with their kids, and asking them to like, hey, can you just like impart some of that wisdom on me because I'm struggling, or, you know,
I do know.
Community is important, and picking good community is really key. But yeah, there's a lot of
depth.
Parent guilt can unpack for like seasons.
But I think people should just be encouraged that there's not too much that a parent can do that they can't come back from.
Yeah.
I think really give the rest to God. Right. Pursue a relationship with God and you'll become the parent you need to be too.
But yeah. For sure.
Good. It's the end of the day.
Let's call
it.
We got a new day that we gotta
deal with tomorrow.
Get to.
Yeah.